423-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, on K2A2BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR in Hood River at 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Democracy Now!, host Joanne Hardesty speaks with Ajamu Umi, with the All Africans People Revolutionary Party, Ricky Muhammad with the Nation of Islam, and John Slaughter with Black Lives Matter about the Million Man March 20th anniversary event last weekend in Washington, D.C. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, News You're Not Supposed to Know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fagerang has an update on African politics and the draining of resources, as well as an update on the attempted coup in Burkina Faso and more. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Dave Mazza interviews Lauren Groff, award-winning author, about her new book, Fates and Furies, a novel about marriage, creativity, art, and perception. And at 11:30, Mark Crispin Miller talks about the forbidden bookshelf, and Peter Hart talks about the recent banned book week. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. You can always become a member or renew by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Governor Kate Brown has yet to take a position on several critical issues facing Oregon, including proposed fracked gas export terminals and a Nestle water bottling facility in Cascade Locks. Activists are ratcheting up the pressure with creative and sustained organizing and protests. Rising Tide activist Emmalyn Garrett last month finished hiking the entire 232 miles in Oregon of a proposed pipeline route that would bring so-called natural gas from the fracking fields of the interior west. This morning, she took on the persona of Governor Brown to deliver a notice of eminent domain seizure to Portland Office of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is facilitating the appropriation of people's property all along the Jordan Cove connector pipeline route, supposedly for the public good. She now joins KBOO's Paul Rowland by phone to talk about organizing against the pipeline and export terminal.
Hello, I'm Looney there.
Hi, can you hear me fine?
Yeah, it's not a perfect cell phone connection, but we'll make do. So how are you feeling after the action this morning?
I'm feeling pretty great after the action. For those who weren't there, Kate Brown, or at least a persona of Kate Brown today, went into the FERC offices in downtown Portland, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission offices, and gave them a little taste of their own medicine. And, you know, tried to stand up against the LNG export projects that are proposed in the state.
Yeah, we actually covered that on the news already earlier on the news. So I'd like to talk to you about, you know, your experiences on the hike the pipe to protest LNG and general organizing. You've been with Portland Rising Tide for quite a while. Now I understand you're relocating to near where you're originally from in Southern Oregon, and you'll be part of Southern Oregon Rising Tide. Talk a little bit about how that hike went. That must have been quite the experience.
Yeah, it was quite the experience. Yeah, like you said, Paul, you know, I grew up in Southern Oregon, and so I'm pretty familiar with the landscape. The last couple of years of my life, I've lived in Portland and have been an activist here and worked with Portland Rising Tide. So the Jordan Cove project is slightly personal to me because it's in a place where I'm from, and also really part of other things that I'm really against that are happening in the state around climate. And the Jordan Cove project is a pretty important issue for all Oregonians, including those in Portland, to care about. Yeah, and so myself and a handful of other folks did a massive hike in Southern Oregon super recently. We hiked from Malin, Oregon, near Klamath Falls, all the way to North Bend on the coast, and we hiked as close as we possibly could on the route of this pipeline. And, you know, we documented and we saw and we met with a lot of the folks who were threatened along the way. It was a pretty cool project.
So how many people participated in the march itself?
We had probably like a dozen folks participate, people from all over the state. It was two folks who went the whole way. And the pipeline is 232 miles. We hiked 315 miles, near as we could to the route. So it was about almost 6 weeks of hiking and quite the project.
So, you know, that's known by a lot of people as, you know, fairly politically conservative territory. Obviously, you know, people are very concerned about their property, right? So they don't like corporations, you know, taking away their eminent domain. How educated did you feel people were about those issues, and how did people relate culturally? Because I'm sure there's a lot of some differences in culture there.
Yeah, well, that's a super interesting question, Paul. So Southern Oregon is a very conservative place. And, you know, my experiences growing up there certainly were not the experiences that I think I would have had in Portland in terms of the culture that I was around. But I also think that Southern Oregon's a very culturally diverse place. And my experiences with Southern Oregon and my experiences while hiking this route have for some time, like, you know, have been that a lot of Southern Oregonians, even if they're conservative and even if they do have ties to the timber industry, which has really been, was more than has been a major economic force in that area. But Southern Oregonians they usually tend to, you know, have some connection to nature and have spent some time in the woods. And a lot of them really care in a sort of conservative way. And definitely there are concerns about pipeline going through property and stuff like that. And that had to do with the spoof that we did today about eminent domain and offices. But I think that, you know, I think that it's a really mixed bag. Another thing to really consider is, like, while there are more conservatives down in Southern Oregon, I think that those state divides are not as clean as some people think that they are or as simple. And there are quite a few very non-conservative people who live in Southern Oregon and have for a really long time. There's quite a few people who've lived there for a really long time. There's quite a few back to the landers who live all throughout rural Oregon. And there's really increasingly diverse communities of folks.
So people not only hiked the route of this proposed pipeline, but there is a number of community events and organizing along the way. How do you feel that the Hike the Pipe initiative increased awareness and furthered the organizing against the pipeline?
I think it really helped get some media awareness around the issue, and I also think it really meant a lot to a lot of communities of folks, some of whom were kind of isolated in what they do. Really, I think they enjoyed having people come walk through and being able to tell their stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, while like I said, it's a real group of people, and you have environmental activists who live in Southern Oregon, you have people with, you know, all sorts of sets of values. I think it is definitely a more isolating experience to be that in Southern Oregon than it is in Portland a lot of the time.
So for
those folks, it was great. And for the communities that we walked through, I think those events meant a lot.
So, you know, there's been, as these extreme energy projects spread their tentacles so rapidly across the country, whether fracking or tar sands or this project, there's increasingly seeing these kind of alliances of activists from various places, local people who may not be used to that kind of activism, sort of forging these alliances, in some place Native Americans and ranchers. And so do you see, you know, sort of some kind of more of an alliance emerging out of this, or is it just sort of going to, sort of people are going to unite briefly and then, you know, go their separate ways?
Well, you know, the thing that I heard over and over, and I talked to some really conservative people in Southern Oregon, you know, some hardened Trump supporters, for example, and some like legit cowboys. And this was a guy, you know, massive rancher, Klamath Basin, was pro pipeline, wanted to come through his property. And, you know, what he said to us is he's like, well, you know, I'm with you on the anti-corporate thing because I don't like that when that comes around here. And that was interesting coming from him because he had just, you know, come in support of the pipeline. His reasons were that he thought he could get natural gas from it, which is a common misconception. But I think it's very tricky for people with different value sets to try to make alliances. But I also think that as a person with a background in environmentalism, that it's important for environmentalists to not lose opportunities to make connections with more diverse communities.
So let's get into the ongoing organizing. I know there's a number of events. One of the many reasons we wanted to do this interview, this weekend, yeah. There's a weekend of direct action and organizing in Eugene. And then next week in Portland on Thursday at the First Unitarian Church, there's a panel on organizing against liquefied natural gas projects in Oregon. Talk about what's going to be happening in Eugene.
In Eugene this weekend, there's Stop the Pipe, and that is an action camp that is being hosted by Southern Oregon Rising Tide, as well as Cascadia Forest Defenders. There's going to be folks planning some further action opposing these LNG export proposals happening Monday the 19th. On the 22nd here in Portland, there's going to be a forum on LNG proposals. And I hiked the one that's in Southern Oregon, but there are two LNG proposals in the state. One is on the northern coast. It goes to Warrington, Oregon. It crosses over the Columbia. It goes through kind of that north coast area, whereas the one that I hiked is down there in Southern Oregon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we've covered fairly extensively both those projects. I believe which project is furthest along? And we'll just talk about the Jordan Cove for now. At what point is that, and how can people do anything, intervene in that?
Yeah, that project is probably about 9 months ahead of the North Coast project. And what's happening with that project right now is that the federal government, FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, has approved their final environmental impact statement on that project. And they have a certificate of approval, which they still have to issue. But mostly right now in the permitting process, the people who are making decisions about it are going to be state permitting agencies. And that includes the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of State Lands. And so back in 2010, when there was a whole other round of LNG proposals, the governor came out against them and actually said, I would sue FERC about this project. And various state agencies also kind of sided with the governor and were more against those proposals. In 2010, those were import pipelines. And now, 5 years later, these are export pipelines. And for whatever political and, dare I say, like corporate reasons, the governor has not yet come out against these proposals, and state agencies have also not yet are going to begin their permitting process and have not yet indicated whether or not they will approve or not approve these projects. So it's really important right now that people are aware about the power the state has, and also people are aware that the state has opposed these projects in the past and very easily can again. So hence the stunt with Kate Brown downtown this morning.
Yeah, well, I think we tried to call up the governor's office to see if reports were true that she had, but I don't believe we got any answer back. So why should people, we only have a couple minutes left, why should people come down to Eugene? What should they expect there?
Yeah, if people can, they should totally come down this weekend. It's a lot of learning about direct action and opportunities to engage in public action about this, and it should be a really great time. And if people want to learn more or people want to get involved in what people in Portland are doing to resist these projects, then they should definitely come to the forum on the 22nd.
And that'll be at the First Unitarian Church at 6:30 p.m. Opens up in panels at 7 o'clock, sponsored by Climate Action Coalition, 350PDX, Columbia Riverkeeper, and many other groups. And that's, I guess, another thing that's happening is there's around the climate issue, around these big fossil fuel infrastructure projects, there does definitely seems to be more working together among the various activist groups in Portland and perhaps around Oregon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's Oregon is a state right now, and the people in Oregon are pretty firmly against having fossil fuel export in our state. And I know that KBOO has done a great job of covering all of those fights before. And I think that this LNG is a pretty major and serious issue right now. But that groups are continuing getting together, and I think that. I think that we're setting ourselves on a track of maintaining that thin green line, as they like to say, around fossil fuel export in the whole state.
Okay. Well, it looks like we're just about at time. So thank you, Emma Lynn Garrett, speaking to us by phone, who impersonated Governor Brown this morning at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Thank you so much, Emma Lynn.
Thank you so much for having me on, Paul. Thanks.
Okay.
And you are tuned to KBOO Portland. Up next is Right to Survive Radio, Right to Dream 2. But first, check this out.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Nosh for Nonviolence fundraiser on Thursday, October 22nd from 5 p.m. until midnight at participating